we're now using the internet to deliver voice rather than traditional telephone lines. So yeah, technology just continues to evolve.
Hello, welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor podcast. I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. Today, I'm joined by Michael Crookson. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Jerry.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for journeying all the way up the road to see me. What was it, about 20 minutes?
Yeah, if that.
So, Michael and his business, Detail Solutions, we've been working with you guys since probably about 2000? When you were, I would think, either at school or...
I would have still been at school. So yeah, it's been a long time. Certainly for my duration in Detail Solutions, the last 10 years we've worked with you, but it goes back much further.
I worked with your dad before then. Some people know about Business Network International, BNI, but I met your dad through BNI 24 years ago. And I still work with people and have relationships with people, business people from that time, from BNI. I mean, some people love it, some people hate it, but the truth is, after 25 years, I'm still dealing with people that I used to. It's great.
Yeah, no, we've got members of staff still doing BNI, so we're a big advocate of it. You meet some fantastic people, and look at this relationship. It's been going almost 25 years.
25 years, yeah. Gee whiz. Right, okay, so we're going to talk about... We're going to talk about various bits of tech today, and the audience generally, and this is my feeling, and unless people reach out to me, and this is your key thing here, guys, if you want to reach out and tell me what you do and what you're interested in, but I think most of our audience are investing in commercial property, obviously from the name, but also there's a number who want to do multi-let. And some of the stuff we're going to talk about is possibly going to suit them better, albeit some single occupants are also going to be interested in this sort of thing. But we're talking about structured cabling, phone systems, Wi-Fi, internet, all these lovely different bits and pieces, right?
Correct, yes. Anything technology is what we can hopefully help in.
Yeah. So maybe we should start with that, and maybe I've stolen your thunder, right? But maybe you could just tell us what your business does now.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, Detail Solutions, we offer managed data, voice and cabling solutions to other businesses. So we provide connectivity, wireless connectivity, voice solutions, both on-premise and cloud-based.
Yep.
And we do our own structured cabling, Cat5, Cat6, Cat6A.
Yeah, so I think originally, when we first started working with you guys, we had I don't even know what it's called now, but some Samsung telephone system that was a big piece of kit that sat in a cupboard somewhere that had umpteen ISDN lines coming into it with a whole bird's nest of cable. Well, we would install the cabling at that time, so it would be bird's nest of cabling and telephone handsets all over the place.
Yes, so technology has evolved.
It's evolved, isn't it?
So back in those times, Jerry, I would say a telephone system was there to simply make and take calls.
Yep.
That was it. But now we're speaking to businesses about integration with third-party solutions. We're now using the internet to deliver voice rather than traditional telephone lines. Technology just continues to evolve. And
We used to have the ISDN lines, and then we moved on to SIP trunks.
Yes.
But that's now changed again, is it?
So we still provide what are called SIP channels for on-premise solutions, but a SIP channel is essentially using the internet to deliver voice.
Yes.
But I would say the majority of our installations now are cloud-based, and that basically means you don't have hardware on site.
Yep.
No longer. The telephone system is hosted in the cloud.
Yeah, and we would have... Attached to that, we'd have a computer that had a call logger on it, so it would log all the calls. And of course, the reason for doing this was twofold. One, to provide your clients with a telephone system, so they didn't have to go out and get their own, so they could have instant access to phones. And you'd provide them a number, and I guess it's still the same now, right? But you'd provide them with a number, and a handset for their office, or multiple handsets, depending on how many members of staff they had. And then the system would log the calls,
yes,
locally on site, and then we'd go at the end of the month, record all those, take that data off,
correct, and send them an invoice. So now all those analytics are web-based, so you can log on to a computer anywhere in the world and you can pull the data that you used to have to hold on a server on site. It's funny you say about telephone numbers. So when you had your ISDN 30, we would have only been able to provide you with an area code for the area that you're in. Whereas now you could come to me and ask for a London, New York and Milan number and we would be able to provide you with that.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? And that, and basically that second part of that, you know, the call logger, the reason for having all that stuff was actually maybe you can monetize this. So sure, give the client's phone system, but also you maybe charge at standard rates, but actually you could bulk buy and there was an arbitrage there to make a little bit of money.
Yes, so you would essentially wholesale call rates and you could set your call logger to then add a percentage and that would be your revenue.
Yeah, so now, correct me if I'm wrong, but now a lot of it's more bundle-based. I mean, do most of your clients go with bundles? So if you take a handset or at least a number, or in fact, maybe you should describe
what you can take of course. Now. So basically now what you're looking at doing is a licensing model. Businesses don't pay for calls any longer. That's a thing of the past. So essentially what we provide is a cloud license with a minutes bundle attached to it and a handset. And that's all bundled into one monthly cost.
Interesting. So if they make the call, it goes over, if it's in our buildings, it goes over the fibre line through the network to wherever, I'm assuming their software or hardware is somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So our servers are situated in London and there's a backup server in Manchester and Reading.
Okay, so the call, the electronic call goes to there. Does what does it do from there? Does it go out on the phone network? How does that?
No,
I'm ringing somebody on their mobile, what happens once it gets to London?
Okay, so the call would call out over the internet, hit the hosted server, which in this case would be in Telecity in London, and that will then pass the call over broadband to the recipient.
I see, right, okay, okay. And then it goes out to them.
Correct.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so are you finding, because you did mention at the start there, some people do on site. What are you finding now, the split between people actually investing in hardware and those that are online?
So 95% of what we do now, I would say, is cloud-based.
Yeah.
Not one solution fits all, so there are still scenarios where we would put in an on-premise solution.
Yeah.
That tends to be more in a hospitality environment where there's large numbers of bedrooms that don't need an all singing and all dancing IP phone.
Yep.
You still just need an analog device that can phone
talk
the reception, phone
whatever,
the restaurant and phone the spa. But in any other scenario, you're pretty much finding that cloud is the way forward. Once you've invested in the licensing on cloud, you really don't need to look at another investment in a telephone system.
And you just add per user a license each time.
Yeah, it gives you much more flexibility.
And how many people actually don't bother with handsets now?
More and more now. Again, it depends on the environment that we go into. So we do a lot of work with charities, and there's a large national charity which we work with, and they pretty much all go down the soft phone route. So they will just open their laptop, plug in their headset, and everything's controlled on their laptop. But we tend to find if you go into more of an office, like a solicitor's environment, they still want a piece of plastic on the desk. It's just down to preference.
Yeah, so some people might just have a headset sat on their laptop or whatever.
Exactly, yes.
And the software's sitting there, or the app.
Correct, yeah, you have the app on your mobile.
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business?
follow the partner link in the show notes.
Your tablet, your laptop, and it can ring on all three devices.
Oh, so, what fun.
You're no getting away from a call.
Okay. I think the evolution of that's been quite interesting. And from a point of view of monetizing it for multi-let locations, is the fact that you can do the bundling, right? So you basically buy it for, like, I'm going to pick a number here, £15 a month, mm-hmm. whatever the number is, and maybe sell it to your client at £20 or £30 a month, whatever it is. Is there any calls that don't fit in there? So for instance, if you're phoning Kazakhstan, is there certain numbers that don't fit in there?
Yes. So what we do is we bundle local, national and mobile calls. And then we give the operator the option to whether they want to give access to international calling to their client. And if they do, then the cloud will give you software that you will get a wholesale tariff, and then you can mark that up and charge it on to the end user.
I see. And is it ever a case that that's bundled in or not?
It's not, because we don't have any control over. We are still paying for
so the bundling is for mobiles, national, local. Correct. In general.
Yes.
Any European or just that's it?
No.
Right. Just
that.
Cool. All right. So 95% are putting in soft systems. If you are getting a phone handset, being the only bit of hardware now, is that generally something you would just buy? Is it something that would go on the contract? If so, how long for?
Yeah. If you are looking for a flexible option, we give you the option to purchase a handset, and then you can purchase a license on a 30-day rolling period. Or we have bundles over 12, 24 and 60, 36 months, sorry, where we can provide the handset as well and you just pay one rental.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Because one of the things that used to get a wee bit difficult for us was when you're buying hardware in particular, rather than the license stuff, you would effectively bring in 10, 15, 20, whatever you thought you needed. But then we have a customer move in that had maybe 20 people on the phone, you'd have to go out and get another 20 handsets. And that became problematic because eventually everybody moves on and then you might have 10 back. And it's like, well, what do we do with these things, right?
Yes.
Whereas now the licensing, obviously you've got to guess or work out how long they're going to be with you. But even if they're with you for a little bit shorter, at some point you can hand those back. Is that basically how it works?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, one shoe doesn't fit all. So we have got a couple of different models. Whereas in the past, I know, Jerry, that we have provided you with hardware and you have then passed that hardware on to tenants. But we're in a position now where that tenant can contact us directly and we can have that relationship, taking away any stress or any barriers to yourself.
Yeah, that's how we work, isn't it now? Yeah. We used to do everything through the old system. Then we started doing things where we bought the IP kit and then we'd deal with that directly with the customer. But now, actually, you guys work alongside us and support the customers directly, which is taking a lot of the friction away for us, but still provides that service for the customers, which has been great. So one of the things that you guys didn't do previously, but you do now, is structured cabling. So I really wanted to talk to you about two things, right? One, the tech and the kit, which we've already started doing. We're going to come back to that because I want to talk to you about internet stuff. But also the other side is just infrastructure. So if you're redeveloping a building, 9 times out of 10, the cabling is not Cat5 at best, you know. Very seldom is it Cat6. And even if it is, it's probably going to the wrong places. And it wouldn't be the first time I've gone to site. You see the data room or the comms cupboard, and all there is now is a bunch of cables sticking out the floor because someone came along and just chopped them all and took the whole cabinet away and everything. Mm-hmm. Quite difficult sometimes to reuse. It's been frustrating over the years where I've had quite a number of times where we've bought a building, it has cabling, you're like, right, okay, well, at least we can use. And I've had customers from a consultancy point of view come and saying, yeah, we've got Cat5, it's all in the walls, there's all the panels everywhere. And you're like, yeah. More 9 times out of 10, you end up having to redo it. I mean, what's your experience?
Yeah, so infrastructure is absolutely key. You can make investment into all your wireless equipment, into the best cloud handsets. If you don't have the infrastructure there to support it all, it's no use. So as standard now, we would only install Cat 6.
Yep.
That we think is future-proofing a building. And I would just say that regardless of what you're thinking about doing, is speak to us or somebody like us at the very beginning to help you kind of 100%. Project manage it, because it is so much more difficult especially if you get to a stage of decoration, plastering, furnishing.
Oh, I need my comms.
And then this would be helpful to have. And then all that hard work's undone.
And you get all this trunking going over the top of stuff, or exactly. You have to start digging holes. Yeah,
you had additional pieces of equipment. You had additional switches so you can extend the network out to another wing. And then that's when it compromises, it compromises the performance, but it can also be unsightly as well.
Yes, absolutely. And we've learned that the hard way. So as much as I like to, and this is me using an excuse, but as much as I'd like to have sometimes put the full boonah in a building, sometimes you're like working on a tight budget and you're like, I'm going to do this in phases. But even if you at least have a forethought as to ways through walls, where you're going to lay it out in the end, having the infrastructure to at least get from one comms cupboard to another, whatever it is.
It needs to be well planned out.
Yep.
And some projects we work on can take years.
Yes,
but phased, as long as it's planned, then we can foresee what we're going to come up against and really future-proof it, so you're not having to take a backward step for something that's either been forgotten.
Yeah. And in the past, so here would be the typical setup. You'd have an office that's maybe for four people. So you might think, you could have thought, I'm actually going to need 8 points here in this space, because I'm going to need four phones and four computers. And maybe even another one for the printer. One other one for something else that does something with the internet, right? And so you've got all these ports everywhere, like 10 ports we're talking about now for a four-person office. And that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And often that cabling would go all the way back to the comms cupboard, however far away that is, put into a patch panel. Forgive me for those. Some of you listen to this like, yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. Others are like, what are you talking about? Patch panel is basically back in the comms cupboard, a space you've set aside with a lockable door to keep all this kit, where each and every point in a room that you can connect a laptop to or something that goes over the internet has to go back to that comms cupboard via the structured cabling we were just talking about. And when you get back to the cupboard, then ideally it would all be set up so that each and every cable is what's called terminated in a patch panel, so that an engineer can come along, or you or some of your staff can come along and say, right, the phone that somebody wants to use is on port number B52 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you can connect up and you know where it's going.
Correct, yes.
And sometimes when you're starting out these projects, that's kind of the last thing on your mind, right? But especially when you're doing historical buildings, you've got to get it in. Otherwise, you end up with unsightly trunking and various other methods to try and not destroy all the work that you've just done redeveloping.
Correct, yes. Ultimately, when you have a client moving in, you've got a tenant moving in, you want to make it as easy and as simple for them so that they can come in, connect our systems, and they can then continue with their day-to-day work.
Do you find, though, so back to that example, 12 ports might have gone in that room. Is that a little bit excessive these days?
It depends on the environment. So again, this is where it's really sitting down and thinking what model you want to follow, because there are different ways of doing things. One example is you might only now have one live Cat 6 data point per room, and then it's down to the tenant to then create their own mini infrastructure within the office.
Yes.
And the reason that's becoming more popular is it then takes the onus off the centre owner, who is no longer liable for maybe any small issues or them.
Yep. Little client. Networking issues.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, you can't be responsible for what equipment your client might bring in and connect to the network. It's not necessarily always a network. It could be a 15-year-old piece of equipment. But then you're starting to enter that grey space that you don't want to be in.
Yeah, it's a very valid point. I mean, that's definitely the route we've been going down now. You will have seen in our latest development, in the first phase, I put in loads of Cat 5 points, as it was. We might be in Cat 6, I don't know, we'll come back to that. But anyway, loads of points. And actually, on reflection, I'm like, this was just stupid. Mm-hmm. I really need one or two, and then a mini switch in their room, which they then use. But equally, which we'll come on to, we use Wi-Fi a lot more now.
Yes.
So the customer may be sat in the room and actually not connected to the wall at all. They're just speaking to the Wi-Fi unit that's outside in the corridor or whatever it is. So it definitely saved quite a bit of money on the front end doing the structured cabling, but nevertheless, you need at least something going into each and every room. But it's not just that, is it? It's other things like, where's the security cameras going? How's the door working?
Entry. You know, there's lots of factors taken to consideration.
To put these and the Wi-Fi units.
Yep, CCTV, alarms, these are all things that you need to think of.
Yeah, and they all need a termination going back to that comms cupboard.
And they'll all work from broadband.
Yeah.
So again, going back to how key connectivity is.
So just to clear this up, what's the main difference between a Cat 5 and Cat 6? Did you say Cat 6A?
Cat 6A, yeah. So Cat 6A is shielded, which in your standard run-of-the-mill kind of office block, that wouldn't be necessary. But the difference in the cable is just the speed or the pass-through on the cable. So Cat 5 would be up to a gig, whereas Cat 6, you could pass up to 10 gig. So it really is future-proofing the infrastructure.
Do a lot of switches, though, only do up to 100 meg? Or are most of them getting better now?
No, most of them, anything we would supply would be a gigabit switch. Yeah. So we still go into maybe more historic setups and you'll get what's called a 10-100. So the maximum throughput on that is going to be 100 meg. So if you've got a 500 meg lease line, for example, and you've only got a 100 meg switch, it doesn't matter. So yeah, all switches would be gigabit.
Yeah, okay. And that switch, that piece of kit you just mentioned there, that is really... So the fibre comes in the building... And we use fibre everywhere, not to say everybody does. Mm-hmm. Fibre internet comes to the building. Then we have a router.
Yes.
Then the router is provided usually by the ISP or the service provider.
Correct.
But then what do we have after that generally?
Okay, so fibre lease line will come. So the fibre will come into the building. It will then hit the router for the internet service provider.
Yeah.
We'll then take a port and put one of our own routers into the cabinet. And then from our router, you'll patch into the switch. And then the switch will be labelled and it'll go out to each individual point out on the floor.
And that switch, is that usually completely firewalled or is that sometimes a choice?
It can be unmanaged or managed. Again, it comes down to the model and... Yeah, how you want to operate the business.
Yeah, because we've had to do the odd workaround where we've maybe needed an IP address. As you know, we've changed our system recently where we had a rather expensive managed system, and now we've got my feeling is all this stuff's going more commodity. It's expected. It's like water, right?
Definitely.
We need it.
Yes.
I often joke, you know, if the water stops, people complain. If the heating stops, people complain a bit more. But if the internet goes down, then we're all in trouble,
it's
right?
It's true. I think any business now just relies on it so much. It doesn't matter what systems you use, their phones, their IT, their accounts software, everything is cloud-based. So without an internet connection, you can't really do much.
Yeah. So basically, with the internet now, our provision... we're trying to, is go more and more Wi-Fi.
Yes.
And are you finding that in offices, people have more PCs that are Wi-Fi related now? Or are they still having to add a bit of kit to make that happen?
No, I would say that a lot more businesses are working wirelessly. So there will still be a need for hardwired connections, mm-hmm. for putting other items onto the network, such as a printer and a scanner. But no, a lot more businesses are working wirelessly.
Yes, so that need for all that structured cabling is reducing.
It is reducing, yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, so we've been talking about phone and internet and that question I wanted to get answered about Cat 5 and Cat 6. So basically, internally, Cat 5 and Cat 6, the same number of cables, right?
Exactly, yes. Cat 6 is just slightly thicker, so it's a wee bit harder to use. But yeah, it will... But there's no difference other than that.
Yeah, okay.
There's still, six cables within... the one cable.
Yeah. So integrations. So there's door access, Wi-Fi units, printers, phone systems, all these different bits and pieces. Are you seeing more and more opportunity for these things to start working together? Because they used to always be so independent from each other. And that through obviously having one managed switch, they're all coming to one place, right? But some of those bits of tech, sometimes they talk to each other, sometimes they don't. I mean, what are you finding? Are things getting better like that or?
Much better. I think a real buzzword at the moment is, well, obviously AI, but automation as well. And it's integrating systems so that businesses can simplify operations and really enhance a client experience. So yeah, more and more of these things are being integrated and we're finding it's more common.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe we should just open that can of worms for a second.
Okay.
Then. AI. I was going to ask you a general question about what do you see coming down the trap, but This sounds like the big one. What sort of things should people be thinking about? I mean, first of all, maybe you can explain where you're seeing some changes.
Yeah.
Also where in time some of those things are going to start affecting people like us.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a long time there is still going to be that need for human interaction. But to give you an example of maybe what we can do today, if you have a co-working space, you could go online, you could request a half day or a full day access, And you can all do this through a bot, through a chat. So there's no human at the other end of this. And once you've set the parameters of what exactly you need, you could then be emailed a pass to enter the building, a permit for parking, a username and password for internet access for 24 hours, and probably a coffee at 12 o'clock if you wanted to as well. That's the way that things are potentially going to continue to move.
Yeah, we've joined most of those dots now on our app, but the one we haven't quite managed without any human interaction is the internet one. That's The one where we're still needing to just get a system where that open API is there so they'll both talk to each other. Yeah. And it is, it's that thing that certainly in recent years where you do you go all in for a system that does everything or do you go for two or three systems that have open API.
Yeah.
So they can talk to each other, right? Mm-hmm. You may need someone to do the coding for you. And we've gone for more the latter because we did have for a period of time a situation where a couple of people, businesses, were providing us with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily what you guys do, but a lot of other stuff, including client management and everything else. But the problem was they were closing off their open API.
Yeah.
So then you find you have to use their systems and then you need to use something else. And then the price starts going up and it starts becoming a bit more challenging. That it seems to me that the upstarts, the less aggressive providers are being a bit more open.
Yeah, 100%. I think you'll find that there is a lot more willingness for manufacturers and suppliers to have open APIs now. Otherwise, users are just going to go and try and find a different solution that does allow for that. So yeah, I would 100% agree that it's more open and there's more willingness there to have an open API.
And is there any AI I'm assuming AI is obviously in phone systems, right?
Yes.
Is there anything that we should be thinking about in terms of building management that you guys are coming across?
At the moment, it's difficult. Again, the technology just continues to evolve. I believe there'll be a time in the not-so-distant future that you'll probably be able to bring in VR, for example, to conference rooms. So people who can't meet in one room, you'll have a virtual reality meeting, if you like, as if everyone is there. So, yeah,
So are you talking partially metaverse?
Yeah, I am actually, yeah.
So I had a really interesting conversation with a provider, a well-known provider in the UK of service space, and that's where the conversation went. I'm like thinking in my mind, really? I thought that had kind of died down, but they were like, no, we use this quite a lot now for conferencing.
Yeah.
And it works really well, and the thing that they're finding that's quite different is that people are a bit more open when they're on that platform because... Yeah. the environment slightly different than perhaps using Zoom or Google Meet, where you've got that two-dimensional conversation going on.
Yeah, no, I think it's a while before it'll become mainstream, but certainly as it becomes more affordable, it's going to be something.
Really interesting you bring that up. I'm going to be interviewing this great lady on a future podcast, so I'm really looking forward to having a discussion about what they're doing with AI. But
I look forward to listening to that one.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and I think to myself, well, right, so we're talking about virtual space. How's that not going to compete with what we do? But I think that's just me looking at it from a two-dimensional mind.
Probably. I mean, it could complement what you do, potentially.
Yeah, I think so. And like you say there, you could, so we have managed to where we have meetings going on, and interestingly, our own ones for CPI Network, where some people are on site, some people are off in different locations, and actually the tech, and we are getting better at using it, but the tech's getting better and better for picking up sound in the room, not getting feedback, putting a speaker in so you can hear the guys that aren't there, see them on the screen, sharing. You know, it is getting better and better. Maybe I'm just getting better at using it, but I guess that is another step, though.
That's another
step,
but yeah, we've certainly come a long way from the spider conference phone that you would pop into the middle of a desk, and everyone
it
would
cost about $3,000 or something stupid.
Everyone would gather around. So, but yeah, like everything, the technology evolves, and it becomes smarter.
I'll let you know when I've had that conversation.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Right. Okay. So, what I wanted to do now is just you've got an idea who's listening, or who we think's listening to our episode, and maybe you could just reflect and share some experience of what people or developers have maybe done wrong, not needing to name any names, particularly if it's me, but just some of the things that people need to watch out for.
Yeah, of course. So a good starting point is, when looking at any type of building, have a look or speak to someone to find out what connectivity is in that area. Because we've already said connectivity, fast broadband is crucial. We have had situations where we've worked with people that haven't maybe done that check, and the only way of getting fibre to the building is paying ridiculous excess construction charges. We've seen scenarios where it's been quoted up to $300,000 to get roads dug up and fibre to a building. So you really want to check that what's in the area just now is going to be fit for purpose.
How far was that?
This particular scenario was a hotel, and it was in the country, so there was a bit of work to do. But
so a grant of maybe $2,000 or $3,000 from the government was not really going to cut it.
Quite cut it. No.
What did they do?
So we actually looked at a couple of different scenarios for them. So we've got a satellite option.
Yep.
Mobile is quite popular, so we can provide broadband connectivity via a 4G and a 5G connection. So again, nothing beats a fixed fibre line. However, there are other solutions out there.
Yeah, we've done, where we've had buildings close to each other and we weren't able necessarily to get a cable in, we've put a bridge in.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi bridge, is it called?
Yeah, correct. So that's just a piece of equipment that sits and passes over the air to another piece of equipment and links the two buildings if it's not possible to put a fixed cable.
Yeah, you just have to make sure no vehicles are driving past too much. Yeah. What sort of distance can they do now?
So it depends on the equipment. We've got a scenario up in Kenmore where we've done it over a lock. Obviously, couldn't get a cable between the two buildings. but yeah, you could be looking at a couple of miles for some of this more expensive equipment. But yeah, it's
okay. So that's one challenge, people not thinking beforehand.
Yeah.
Actually, let's check the postcode, see whether I'm going to be able to get fibre internet here.
Yeah. And if fibre is possible and it's not going to cost too much, if anything, there's also a timescale to that. We've had situations where if you're relying on a council to put in a traffic permit to allow for work during the night, to dig up part of a road or whatnot, it can take up to a year to get what you need done. So again, I would say it's important to engage with somebody early on just a conversation over a cup of coffee, and that could really help you long term.
Okay. What other issues have you come across that people have maybe not thought about and ended up costing them a bit of money?
Going back to infrastructure, maybe just not planning correctly. I think it's important to have a clear model in mind of how you're going to operate.
Yeah.
Things will change, but ultimately, once you sit down and have a chat and give somebody the advice or the options, it's really about then building around that. Because you could go off on a tangent running lots of cables and 70% of them aren't needed, or you could run minimal cables and then you need a lot more.
Yeah.
So it's just having conversations and planning.
Okay. Any other scenarios you've come across and these guys had maybe thought about this a little bit more, we could have done this a little bit better, or other things that developers have maybe not quite thought about? I mean, for me, an obvious one would be the little points in the ceiling for Wi-Fi or for cameras, that sort of thing. But I guess there must be other things that people forget about. I mean, what about comms covered? I mean, what do we need for a comms? You know, how many times you turn up on site, right, late? Where's all this stuff going?
It's interesting because, you will find you'll turn up and the consultancy company will pull out a floor plan and we're going to put this here and this here. You ask them, what about the comms area? Oh, we've not thought about that. So again, it just comes down to planning, having those conversations early doors, and speaking to kind of the experts in the field so that you don't miss things like this.
And then the thing about comms covers, right, is that we still got it. We have one down in one of the Rosyth buildings that you'll know, and it used to have an air conditioning kit in it, right? But when we bought that building, it had loads of infrastructure. They were switched on but never used.
Right.
Like, ridiculous. But it had an air chiller because the room was...
It gets warm.
Getting warm, right? Mm-hmm. With all this old kit. But now, most of that infrastructure's gone and we've got maybe one or two switches in there that do everything. And, you know, are you finding more and more scenarios where, A, the comms cupboard is smaller than they used to be, and B, don't necessarily need air conditioning?
No. I think there's less and less kit being hosted on site.
That's true, yeah.
A lot of, or all switches will have internal fans for cooling. So all I would say is don't put a comms room in a place that's maybe got...
Boiler room.
Boiler room would be one. I have seen top floor of an office with big glass windows, so the sunlight coming in, and then that can cause overheating.
Yep.
But no, with more minimal kit actually on site required, and the kit itself... having fans built in, there's no need to really go to the cost.
Maybe so. Let's have a think about a typical building. You know our buildings, right? So I'm just trying to think, a 10,000 square foot building with, let's say, 30 offices. You know, what would we typically expect in a comms room? Are we talking about, you know, umpteen racks, or actually?
No. So you would. So off the top of my head. How many offices? Sorry?
Say 30 offices. 30. I mean, the one in Dalgety Bay is 34 offices.
So, the cabinet, really, you would have a couple of patch panels.
Mm-hmm.
You would have perhaps a 48 or a couple of 48 port PoE switches.
Yeah.
A router. And what else would you have? And maybe a UPS, an uninterruptible.
Yeah.
Sorry, can't say that word.
Battery pack thing. Supply.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, we wouldn't be
still
needed.
Okay. And maybe a security camera system if that's something you've got.
Yeah, a DVR for your cameras.
So in terms of rack space, and that's basically the sort of the shelf or whatever in your cabinet thing, you've got two patch panels, let's say 48s or something.
Yeah.
So 96, is that right? 96, whatever it is, 48 and 48, 96 ports. Then you've got maybe 248 switches. If you're going to patch everything in and never have to go back.
Yeah.
So now we're up to four.
Yeah. And we might have the switches, even if you were just one or two cables per room, once you factored in things for like CCTV for cameras.
That's true, yeah.
Everything goes back to that cabinet. So yeah, you would.
So yeah, 96 would give you two for each room and then spare for the other stuff. Yeah. Yep. Obviously, if you need more, you need more. But then, so that's basically four racks. Then we've got the router coming in. Usually that takes up two rack spaces. Then
yeah,
the router.
So you'll have, if it's a lease line, you'll have your fibre tray, which takes up one U. Then you'll have the internet supplier's managed router and our own router.
So we're at seven now. And then you'll have, have we covered the switch? Yeah, we've covered that. Yep. Seven.
And you'll have a server for your wireless network, which is kind of the brains behind the operation.
In our case, it's called, what's it called?
So it's a Ubiquiti, you've standardised on Ubiquiti. It's a UDM, which is a Unified Dream Machine. And
Dream Machine, what allows us to remember what it was.
Yeah, that was it. and that allows us to basically configure the site the way that you want to operate it.
So we're about eight slots or whatever now. Yes, the UPS would need. So I don't know if I included the, I should have written all this down beforehand, whether I've included the cameras, but anyway. Oh, and the doors. If you've got a door situation where you're using EQ unit or whatever they're called to talk to the doors. Yep. So overall, we're still really talking about one cabinet.
Yeah, definitely. You'll have maybe a couple of cable management bars in there as well to keep everything tidy and labelled. But yeah, certainly, definitely not a cabinet any bigger than taller than me and you anymore.
Okay, yeah, so that give people an idea. So for that cabinet, you're going to need a decent-sized cupboard where you can open the door, somebody can get in and play around with all the different cabling and everything else rather than it all being rammed in there. And of course, I would say, holding my hands up here, one of the other things you've probably come across, certainly some of our sites that are older, is spaghetti junction.
Yes.
Cables coming everywhere and not necessarily labelled, which is a big no-no, right? It's not impossible to solve.
No,
but it's a lot of time,
toning
out cables, trying to work out where they go.
If it's done properly, first time around, everything's labelled and tested, it's okay. Everything's labelled and tested.
Yeah.
Long term, that is going to save you a fortune in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I did touch on it there, but actually it is important to think, well, you could, especially because we're reducing the number of ports we have now, basically patch everything. So every single port in the building has got a cable connecting it to the switch.
Yes, correct. So we actually have the ability that everything will be patched in to every port in each office, and we can remotely turn that off and on. So the scenario that we have just now is if you've got a new tenant moving in, you email us the tenant's names and details, we activate the port, and we set up the Wi-Fi.
Whereas in the past, one would have had, you know, which port are they using in the office, which you know, and it would go on, and you'd have to then patch it on site because actually patching in 200 cables into a lot of switches is actually quite expensive.
Especially if it's not labelled when it was done as well.
Yes.
So yeah, that's where it becomes challenging.
Okay. All right, cool. Maybe we should just talk a little bit about where people can find you and the sort of services you guys provide. You've kindly agreed to work with us more closely. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about where people can find you.
Yeah, certainly. So again, we are a telecoms company, so you can phone us. We want to have conversations, so you can call us. You can email us. All our contact details are on our website.
I think if somebody wants to reach out to you to get support, there's two bits. One, geographically, where do you cover? You know, if they're listening to this in Kazakhstan, where we do have some listeners, hello, then that might not be a system you might not be able to help with.
Probably not. But no, we will cover UK wide.
Yep.
We have our own engineering team, our own provisioning team. Although we're based in Fife, we have clients that cover Scotland and England.
And anybody that wants, is just going through the throes of this in their mind, right, what do I need? How am I going to develop out my building? Because maybe got some plans now. They've maybe bought the building, but they're trying to work it all out. What can you do for people that are just at that initial stage of trying to work out what they can do? Is that something you can help them with?
Most definitely. So I think a lot of people we do deal with are like first and second, it's our first and second projects. for many of them. So yeah, we want to offer a consultative approach. It's not a sales approach. I mentioned earlier, we've had projects that have been ongoing for a number of years. So it's really just about having a conversation, identifying what it is you want to achieve. And yeah, having that discussion about how we could, would we be a good fit in working together going forward?
Brilliant. Okay. So it's all the W's, Detail, is it hyphen solutions?
Detail-solutions.
Detail-solutions.co.uk. Look at that, I remembered that. Wow. Emailed you guys
for 25 years. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. I think that's it, Michael. Anything else we need to talk about?
No, unless there's anything.
I think that's it. If anyone's got any questions, either reach out to Michael or reach out to us. Spotify gives you a chance to leave some comments, or you'll find our email address or whatever in the show notes. So thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I enjoyed it.
Appreciate it. You feel all right now? Is that okay?
Fine,
yeah. All right?
I'm feeling fine.
Didn't have to worry over the weekend forward. After all.
No, not at all. And we'll hopefully get another opportunity. I've really enjoyed it.
Great, brilliant. Thank you.